So I think that first EP, really, we didn't know what we were doing from a musical point of view.
You should have called it that. We don't know what we're doing by all.
We don't know what we're doing.
All that matters is
wrong.
This town deserves a better class.
Heavy Metal Podcast.
I'm gonna get it.
If you do not listen, then the hell with you.
Walk through the gate of consciousness. Stop from drop from under you.
Hello, you beautiful mother punchers. Before we take our final deep dive of Season 2 into Alice in Chains, I got the chance to talk with Tom B., the lead vocalist for one of the best bands that I have discovered in recent years, Allfather. They are a hardcore, sludge, doom band that falls pretty squarely into a category I like to refer to as hardcore sludge doom. Yeah, I fucking nailed it. My introduction to Allfather was through their most recent release, A Violent Truth, in 2023, and I put some of those songs into the interview so that you can hear just how much this band fucks. I also talked to Tom about the band's development and back catalog, and I included some of that content here as well. But then we get into the band members, all of whom are definitely real, the struggles of being a DIY band in heavy metal, the politics and poetry of the lyrics, musical influences, and of course, the worst demonstration of fire safety in the history of the United Kingdom. So sit back, take a listen, and get ready to throw some horns, because Allfather is some brilliant and brutal shit. And the next time you hear from me, I'll be back with the first episode of the final series of Season 2 on Alice in Chains. But before we get to what Mr. T might consider the jibba jabba, let me introduce Allfather with the opening track off of their 2023 release, A Violent Truth. This is Poisoned Soil. So, dude, thank you, first of all, for doing this. This is awesome. I'm so glad. I love getting to do this because, you know, I become a big fan and then I go, oh, my gosh, I get to talk to Tom from Allfather. And, you know, like I get to sort of speak to my to some heroes. So I really love Allfather. I was introduced to you guys. Someone had posted A Violent Truth on my Twitter feed and said, you know, I'm not really a sludge person, but if I were, this is what I would be into, and posted it. And I was like, all right, I'll take a listen. And I was immediately sold. So that's how I was introduced to you guys. And then I went and, you know, listened to the back catalog. And it's really tough balance to do the music that you do, which is, you know, which I think has sort of somewhat a limited frame with so much variety inside of it, which is really impressive and a hard balance. And I think it's great. You're listed as Tom B, and then, and your vocals and lyricist.
Yep. Sorry. Yes. Tom B and vocals.
Look, if you don't want to own it, that's fine.
No. So Tom B came about by accident, I think. So someone like, I don't know, I just got credited somewhere as Tom B rather than Tom or Tom Ballard, my surname. And often people mispronounce, misread Ballars. Americans say it weird anyway. So I'm kind of happy with just like Tom B. So we've stuck with it.
Well, I was like, is that a clever is that a clever wink to the word tomb? I didn't know if that's what that was. No, it wasn't intended. Because you have Alan Cordner as ABC. So I assumed his middle name was a B and he's just going by ABC in credits.
Yeah, that developed, I think, over a while. Again, just easier for him. And he likes to show off a bit fancy. So he goes ABC. But I've been doing the band 10 years now, and that's the first time anyone's ever mentioned Tom B is also Tomb. I never realized it until just this second. So
we're making history right here, man. I'm a nerd for language stuff like that. So that's great. So yeah, you guys met, you guys formed in 2013. Are you in Kent?
Kent in the UK. So
yeah.
We live in a place called the Medway Towns. Well,
Medway, most I read of us that, yeah.
have at some point lived in the Medway Towns. Yeah. Medway rather than Kent.
Guy Smith is the drummer. Is that right? Because that sounds like a fake name.
No. Yeah, he's my stepbrother. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool.
He's very much real. So, yeah, we've known each other since he was about 3 or 4.
He only joined you guys for Violent Truth.
He was actually our first proper drummer way back in 2014.
Oh, okay.
So he doesn't remember it, but he wrote a couple of the drums. Parts of the drums off the very first EP.
No Gods, No Masters.
Yeah. But he was also playing in a band called Pay No Respect, who were like a hardcore band. They got a record deal. And basically with his job, he didn't have time for both. So he said, look, I can't really do both. I want to try and go and make it with what's happening with Pay No Respect. We're like, fair enough. 15 years later, All Father started. Our guitarist, now bassist, Andrew. So me and him are like founding members. And Guy was by far the most talented out of all of us. So it wasn't a surprise that he went. Fast forward 7 years later or so, we tried out a couple of other drummers. None of them really, really worked. And Guy was in a position where Pay No Respect had split up. And gradually we decided all together that he was the new and probably only ever future drummer of cool. Allfather. So, because I think the sound and what we got on A Violent Truth was really where we all want to be.
I wanted to talk to you about that, the sort of the development of the band, because for me, listening to No Gods, No Masters, it has a distinctly sort of hardcore sound to it. And I think, you know, the politics are right up on the surface. No justice, no peace. You've got a song called Post-Austerity Blues, you know, whereas later on in the discography, the politics, which I want to talk to you about, because it's one of the reasons why I really love the band, is that there's a really ferocious political outrage to it. As you guys developed, you're making your point through fantastical or historical examples, or at least it sounds that way anyway to me. So, you know, there's some very clear lyrics on that first EP about you know, no justice, no peace, you know, the very modern kind of language. And then you start with A Violent Truth in what, 2023. And the very first lyrics, which I absolutely love, are crawling through poison soil. This is off song Poison Soil. Beneath a cancer sky, the starving peasants toil to build a temple to your lies. That is such a great way to start an album. And it tells us about the world as you see it, or at least as you're critiquing it. But you know, we don't build temples. There's something about it that feels anachronistic or classical or fantasy based. So how did that develop?
Andrew wrote, I think, the lyrics for No Justice and for The Great Destroyer. So The Great Destroyer is actually about Spanish Civil War.
Yeah.
And actually does have some of those elements of
it does.
What we later went on to do. Right. Post-Austerity Blues was meant to be a clear punk song, but again, kind of looked at the government from a point of view of our monarchy and our government and the sort of class system that we get. It's very paramount that there is a ruling class.
Yeah, top down, right.
And top down. I mean,
they're literally called lords. The House of Lords.
Literally, we have a House of Lords,
of lords.
As part of our government that are completely unelected.
Yeah.
So it's very, very prevalent, I think, in terms of our politics and what I see, our like UK politics. So that has always been there from the start. And I think as we went along, me and Andrew write the lyrics. We're both pretty clear on sort of like our politics and things like that. And he's a beautiful writer. So if you ever read any, like Poison Soil, pretty much him. I always say if you read a passage and think that is poetic and wonderful, he wrote it.
Yeah.
And if you read a passage that makes you want to like punch something and throw your fist in the air and scream along to it, that's probably something I jammed in there to make it heavy metal.
So let me guess. When it's an eye for an eye, then we'll take two. When yes, the world goes exactly. blind, it's on them, not you. That's you.
Exactly. That's me. So
that is such a great fucking line, man. I love that song so much.
Yeah, when that came to me, I was like, oh shit, that's really good.
Yeah.
When it's eye for an eye, we'll take two. When the world goes blind, it's on them.
Yeah. So in terms of like the lyrics and the vocals and the songs, mm-hmm. as well as the politics, we really want to play rock and roll, you know?
Yeah.
We want to be a heavy metal band.
Fuck yeah.
We want to be like our shows off, we want them to be fun, you know. Whilst the things we're singing about not necessarily are, we enjoy playing live. We're very much a live band. Pretty much every song we've ever written, we've played live. We've played in the live environment. So we're all really conscious about making songs awesome, you know?
Totally.
Not just
totally.
Clever, but making them awesome, making them want to bang your head and scream along. And because that's the music that,
yeah.
that we like. That's what excites us. There are a million straight up doom bands. There are a million straight up sludge bands. There are a million. And most of those, unless they are top tier,
mm-hmm.
don't really interest certainly me. So that's, you know, to your previous point about that variety that we build in, that's why we try and build in all that variety, to make sure we've got that energy. It's fun for people to see. They might not be expecting what happens next, which goes along with, you know, very much the vocals
yeah.
and the lyrics try and match where we are in the song and trying to wrap that all together into that to that All Father package.
Yeah, you guys have a great sense of the theatricality of it, of when it, you know, how it build, when how to build and release tension, and where something is all of a sudden, you know, there's an extra, the drums kick in, or all of a sudden let's stop the music and it's just, you know, the distortion sound and the vocals coming over like on Take Their Eyes, which is great. I just wanted to ask you really quick, and then I want to move on to Bless the Earth with Fire, which was the first proper LP in 2016. And but the very last song, The Worms Won't Have Us, it has such a, I heard at one point, I was like, oh, that has such a Kylesa vibe to it. And I wondered if you were a fan of them or if that was intentional.
I'm not. I think Andrew, who wrote it, might be. Alan kind of is. Guy wasn't really about. I just hear it as our Hatebreed song, quite frankly. A Hatebreed riff. But it wasn't written, it certainly wasn't, the guitar point of view wasn't written from that point of view. That's kind of how I saw it. But it reminds me of I can't remember which Hatebreed song. But where it comes from, I don't know. But you'll notice out of all our songs, it is our least complicated, for sure.
It's very punky.
The first time I sung it live, I ran out of breath. Like,
yeah, I can see that. Chorus,
like, I was like, shit, how am I going to do this for the rest of it? Sort of.
That's
thing.
When you got to point to the crowd, man. You guys, yeah, well, there was, you take it.
Our first show, there's about six people there. Well, you know, many of our shows has been about six people there, but there wasn't really many people to do that to. But yeah, it was, I think we just wanted that and Post-Austerity Blues to be really like punky and in your face. We played that for a while as like our sound check, but we might not have played that for the past 4 or 5 years, I think, that song.
Great. It's a great track. I really like that EP, and it's so interesting. I hear influences very clearly in bands' early work because I go, oh, this is what they're, you know, this is what they were inspired by, what they were influenced by, which I always think is interesting just because it takes a bit. I was just listening to an interview with Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains where he was talking about it takes a while for you to find your sound. And if you listen to like some of their early demos, you go, yeah, they're just doing Guns N' Roses here. And oh, look, that's Layne Staley trying to sound like Steven Tyler. You know, it's just such a weird thing to hear that. And then you hear them click in on Facelift and especially on Dirt and you go, oh, that's their sound. They found it.
Yeah, I think if anything, the discussion that me and Andrew, I remember having vividly, like on one of our first second band practices, was if we can sound a bit like we're on Southern Lord. Southern Lord was really big at the time, about 10 years ago, things like Black Breath and all those bands coming out. And that was like our one thing that we want: good songs, cool songs. Mm-hmm. And if they can sound like we should be on Southern Lord, then we're probably doing something right. And I think maybe No Justice does that. I'm not sure the rest of it does. But that was the one conversation we had about what do we want to sound like? We're always really interested in pacing our records properly.
Yeah.
We have a clear opener. We have a clear ending. We have something in the middle. Totally. And we have bits either side. So what's the story we want to tell? And what sort of songs do we need to be able to have that? And then we have bits. We have our Sepultura bits and we have our... Yeah. Crowbar bits, and we have our, you know, we need the, you know, those bits, but I think that's the only probably time we talked about what sort of band we want to sound like.
All of my favorite bands, the bands that I gravitate to, a lot of time are really good at taking bits from things and going, oh yeah, this is Sepultura, this is da 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 da, and blending it in a way. I love the word synthesize, but synthesizing it in a way that it sounds unique. So then you hear it and you go, no, this sounds like Allfather now. You know, it doesn't sound like Sepultura or whatever. So for Bless the Earth with Fire, it's great that second song, The Bloody Noose, there's such a great, you talk about pacing, but I just all of a sudden loved when it's slow, you slow it down. You guys are great with internal pacing. You know, you're changing the pace of it, which is very, I think, sludgy, sort of a feature of sludge, but it has this great sort of like, now, you know, you're slowing it down now. There's a bit of storytelling. And then Mouth of the Beast is like pure thrash. You know, it's such a fast forward song. And I wondered about that, sort of the structure.
Time, bloody news, my final decline.
Okay, so on Twitter, you had said a while ago, if we have a genre or a subgenre, what do you think it is? And you asked that question. And I always, it's always interesting to me because I think that's something that people who aren't in bands obsess about. And people who are in bands are usually like, I don't fucking know. So what do you consider yourself? How do you feel about the question?
Well, I think generally that was kind of a tongue-in-cheek joke because this is a conversation that we just have when we read reviews. We're generally pigeonholed as a sludge band. And that's how it is. And really, we probably consider ourselves a heavy metal band. I think generally that's how I would describe us is we're a heavy metal band. Hardcore is a big part of that. I think I said the foundations, I think, are probably set around sludge and hardcore. Mm-hmm. Hardcore is also a big part of certainly what myself and Alan and Guy have always been into. Andrew to some extent as well, but slightly more esoteric sort of stuff. That sludge tone, I suppose, mixed with the energy of hardcore is probably the two things we're trying to harness most, but not necessarily by playing hardcore, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I can really hear it, especially in that in that first full LP where the sound really starts to develop into what I think it, you know, it ends up sounding like on And There Will Be and All Will Be Desolation and A Violent Truth. But it's really cool to see it, you know, come together through somebody's discography. That closer song, Blood Red Sunset, is one of my favorites of yours. I love that song. That was your single. What?
Yeah. So that's not the closing. That's like a bonus track that
we
recorded completely separately in a completely separate studio and was the first song I think we ever wrote.
No shit.
And we had an opportunity. We got a free studio day. We went down there, recorded it. The guy recording it was a massive deathcore fan. He put a big sub drop in there as well. And generally we hate it.
Really? Oh, good. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad I really laid into that one then. You know what? That's my favorite.
Interestingly, it's about lyrically wise, it just tells the story of a disaster that happened in Medway in a park. I think about 100 years ago, there was a fire display as part of like a fete. They built this big wooden building. They were going to set it alight. There was people in there and it was a display where the fire brigade were going to come in and rescue people.
Oh my God.
And it really caught light and loads of people died in it. And it was like a big, big disaster in the town.
What committee approved where they were like, hey, well, let's get the worst idea ever committee together and see what we can come up with. What the fuck?
Yeah. And that park is my child, where I grew up, basically. So I grew up playing in that park, basically. The official ending of that record is And Hell Followed With Him.
And you
stuck that on the end because actually, interestingly, the one and only time we've been involved with a proper record label, although it didn't end up getting released on that label because they didn't do any of the things they said they were going to do, the record label went, can you stick Blood Red Sunset on the end
On the end of it. And they released it as a single.
We released it as the single.
You did. Okay.
They said, can you stick it on the end of it? And we were like, okay, it's only five tracks, so we'll get that. They didn't actually do any of the stuff they did. And the day before it was supposed to be released, we cancelled the contract with them and we did a self-release, which we've pretty much done ever since. Death Followed With Them is the official end of that record. Go back and listen back. The difference in the recording and the production on it is completely different.
Well, I really loved it. And I think I was looking at the lyrics for it the other day. This is particularly haunting to me. Bathed in light, they came together, the brightest sun on the blackest of days. Families walked in the procession. Children waved as they walked to their graves. That's so haunting. And it reminds me of that scene in Schindler's List when all the kids are on the bus, you know, and they're waving goodbye to their parents and they're so happy. They have no idea where they're going. It's just like, oh, God, that is so terrible. I didn't realize that was the backstory for it. That's incredible.
Yeah. So if you look on the Bandcamp page for the single, I think there's a little splurb there that I put in about what it was about.
Well, I'm glad. Good. I'm glad I chose to focus on that song that you hate.
but it was the first one. It was the first one we wrote. So there is like a fond memory of it to some extent. But I think by the time we had recorded it, released it, it just didn't. It feels quite different to what we went on to do. I think after that,
it's your Creep. You know, it's like Radiohead going, if I hear that fucking song one more time.
Flesh burns.
And then 2018, And All Will Be Desolation, which I love that album. I especially love the title. I always notice when you know, albums start with "and," if that has any sort of reference to Injustice for All, or if that's an influence, or what are your influences actually? Like, what are, like, I mean, you've said Hatebreed a little bit, Sepultura, but I'm interested in hearing.
So bearing in mind, I'm 46, guy's 10 years younger than me, mm-hmm. but he was my brother and I grew up with him. So all his influences are very much mine because I shared all my music with him.
Same. That's my brother and me as well.
But between us, I think we probably cover, in terms of some sort of fandom, all aspects of punk and hardcore and heavy metal and black metal. I love ska punk, a bit mm-hmm. of hip hop. So I think our influences, when you get into your 40s and you say, what's your influences? It's like kind of 30 years of listening to like right, alternative totally. Music. And there are big things that stand out. Obviously, those bands that you get into when you're young. So Alan in particular, a massive Slayer fan, a massive mm-hmm. Metallica fan, a massive Alice Jerry Cantrell fan in particular.
Oh, yeah.
For me, it was more Rage Against the Machine, Sepultura, Machine Head were massive for me well. Andrew's a bit younger, so a bit more nu metal based, but he's a lot more, likes weirder type stuff and likes more black metal and strange stuff. I like pop music, in essence. If you can make it really aggressive and like really catchy, I'm into it. I'm sitting here with a pair of Get the Shot tracksuit bottoms on, which are like a, you know, hardcore, metalcore, hardcore bands. I've got 400 t-shirts sitting there, 3,000 CDs. It's like whatever works for us, you know.
Absolutely.
Let's use that.
When you love, good music is good music. When you love it, you know.
There you go. Yeah. I struggle with a lot of power metal.
Yes. We're the same.
Comedy music.
You're like speaking my inner monologue that I can't say most of the time on the podcast. Yes.
I
like funny bands.
Gather. I'm a positive guy. I like to have a laugh, but like bands, comedy bands in particular, have like shtick.
Yep.
I generally find really difficult, and that then blends into like tribute bands and things like that. That
Steel sort of Panther general, and stuff like that.
There is that. There is sometimes a band that can just be fun. That's fine.
Sure.
But when that moves into like comedy, I'm like really not interested.
I'm a comedian. I'm my entire life is comedy and jokes. But like when it comes to music, I love bands that are very serious and very philosophical, which I think there's a lot of philosophy and a lot of politics in your work. So, And All Will Be Desolation. Start with Black Triangle. Terrific. Just what a great album. It's really, well, you know, one of the standouts for me that I absolutely love is, I'm sure you're going to hate it. You're gonna be like, that's the one song we hate on that album, is By Sword, By Famine, and By Plague.
That's not. I thought you were going to say, what's the Dust song on it?
Inherit the Dust.
Inherit Dusty. It was so long ago, I can't even remember that's the one on that album where it's probably our least favorite.
But, oh, really? Why?
But no, because I think we did the same. We recorded it as a single first, and then we re-recorded it. Whilst we're really happy with the songs, some of us wanted to do different things, more like A Violent Truth. Others didn't. So it's that was built through compromise, that album. We were all the same, like knowing what we wanted, good quality, but what that mm-hmm. good quality was.
Yeah.
It was slightly more of a compromise versus like that extreme hardcore aspect versus that traditional stoner,
doomy, sludgy
mastodon kind of thing, which is why Black Triangle starts as it does and ends on a mastodon jam session
totally. Kind of thing.
Truth is much more utterly built from cooperation through the pandemic and online a little bit, and that was much more difficult to write.
This is more of a, I don't know, less of an artistic question and more of just a an artist in a very difficult business question. Do you feel like you are expanding who it is that you're able to get to with every album? Do you feel like you have more and more audience and listener? And what's the biggest sort of barrier to that, do you think, from where you're at?
So I think really interestingly, looking at our biggest record, it's probably Desolation. We paid for some PR for that record. Not like top tier PR, like budget PR.
The guy holding the sign with the arrow that dances on the corner to show you where the car wash is.
As you might have picked up over the past 10 years, pretty constant on Twitter in terms of promoting the band.
Yeah.
And so a combination of that PR, that Twitter push, some excellent reviews that we got from some big small sites really actually made that. I bear in mind it was a self-release. It was really popular and continued to be. So we got a lot of longevity from that record.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think when the pandemic hit, people were looking for music, certainly at the beginning. A Violent Truth is a slightly shorter record. We didn't pay for PR. The labels that we wanted to work with weren't interested in working with us. So we said, fuck it, let's do it ourselves again. But again, it was really, really popular. We got better reviews bar one big site that didn't like it. You loved all our other records, but didn't like this one. And then we got in Metal Hammer. We got some, for a small DIY band that doesn't really play a lot of shows, certainly outside the Southeast, aren't on any labels, we've done really well in terms of our barriers. So I feel like I've conquered Twitter in terms of like being a band on Twitter. Maybe not now, where it, you know, as it dies its horrible death,
right?
And
we're all on a corpse, sort of, we're all just worms on the corpse.
Exactly. But where we've struggled is because I think we don't really have a local scene that we're part of.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a genre scene that we're part of,
right?
So we can't go play death metal shows. We don't get asked to play death metal shows. We don't get asked to play hardcore shows.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, it's sort of an irony that like the fact that the reason why I gravitated towards Allfather was because of the way that you blended genre and the way that you didn't fit in necessarily to one thing, and it felt unique, and it felt, I could hear a bunch of influences, but it all seemed very unique to you guys. But then that makes it difficult in terms of promotion, because you can't just be, it's a sludge band, it's a death metal band or whatever. It's like, it's sort of it sucks, because I think then, you know, what it does is it manufactures music. You know, we're a death metal band and we do death metal music. And so that we can go to the death metal shows, and then you're never going to write anything outside of death metal. And so I'm not going to listen to it. You know what I mean? Like, there's something like that. But it is cool that there, I do think, you know, it's great to have champions. You have to send me a list of the labels that you wanted, and I will personally harass them on Twitter. But it's cool that, like, you know, that like somebody sends me your album and goes, I know you like, I know you like sludge. I know you like doom. I know you listen to this, and because I think you're going to love this. And I immediately did. As you know, you have people who, even people who aren't necessarily into that genre, recognize it and go, this is special. This is different.
We've got people that have never seen us live, but have every single t-shirt we've ever printed.
Nice.
So that sort of commitment.
That's cool.
We have multiple t-shirts that we've printed. We have sent t-shirts, I think, pretty much almost all over the world now. Not huge amounts, but there are two t-shirts in Japan. There was one in China, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There is some in Australia and New Zealand. So
I just love the idea of one guy in China just rocking out to Allfather. That makes me so happy.
I think we sent the CD to Indonesia.
One last sort of thing that I did want to talk to you about is the politics of it. You're very vocal on Twitter about, you know, we are trans rights. We are, LGBT rights. We're like, if you do not agree with that, if you do not agree with us politically, you can go fuck yourself. And I love how very forward leaning you are on that. And I try to avoid as much as possible politics and things like that on the podcast. I do love bands that are so forward leaning and believe in that so much, because I do as well. And it's something that, one of the reasons why I gravitated to you guys as a band.
Yeah, I think from a vocal point of view, those sort of politics, like I said, bands that I've listened to in the past, for me, they add, and for Andrew as well, a passion to the lyrics. You're actually singing about something that's important, and that helps from a point of view of delivering, but also I think hearing that as well. I'd much rather sing along, shout along, scream along to the lyrics from watching a band that means something rather than not. That's not to say that I'm quite happy to listen to, you know, singing along about bollocks, but they're the more emotional times for me when those things mean something. And from the point of view of Twitter and stuff like that, I just want to be clear about what what we are. And I don't have the time to fucking argue with people. So that's why it's like, this is it and fuck off. And then
exactly.
And then a reminder every now and again in terms of like what we're about. But
no, I love that. And I love that it, you're not, that's not all of it. You know, that's not all the content. Yeah, that's just, I do love the fact that you're like, you know what? I don't have time to argue with people. So I'm just going to let you know exactly where I stand and they can deal with it or not. I love that. I do also love, I love these lyrics and Take Their Eyes. I just, this is so good. And I'm sure this is you now. I'm sure this is a Tom jam, Tom joint right here. All oppression is a form of violence. Throw it back to keep them silenced. All oppression is a form of violence. Turn it back to keep them silenced. Murderous fucks demanding dignity when it suits them, spitting in the face of humanity. As tyrants rise, we tear them down. We'll leave them swinging with a carrion crown. I love that. That's fucking metal.
I think that is probably a slight mixture of me and Andrew.
Maybe sure. You got toward Andrew toward the end there?
Yeah, to Andrew towards the end. So Carrion Crown was the name of another song that we didn't make it to the record. So Carrion Crown was actually a name of another song. And we recorded Take Their Eyes with a different chorus. Al ABC, who does our, he's our musical director, was like, shit chorus. So I was like, oh, okay. So that's where I grabbed that and was able to build that other chorus around it. So again, that came from looking back, you know, looking at probably the Black Lives Matter sorts of riots and that feeling of finding appropriate ways to protest.
Right. Oh,
especially
my God.
When it comes to minorities who feel threatened by status quo and finding ways, not even from like the right wing, extreme right wing, but from a centrist and liberal point of view to criticize the way they're doing things.
Right.
When actually you have no skin in the game really about it. You just don't like it. And I don't necessarily want streets to be being torn up and stuff like that. But at the same time, and it feels uncomfortable, it does, but criticizing people that are sometimes fighting for their lives or at least other people's.
Right.
When it doesn't really affect you because you don't like it and inconveniences you, just feels off and wrong and continues to. I think that was written during those times of just about recognizing that what you're going through doesn't necessarily, and the inconvenience you feel actually has nothing to do with it. Shut the fuck up and let these people try and defend themselves at least.
What a great way to end, man. Thank you so much. That was awesome.